Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
I'm Robin Crane, and this is the Growing Your Financial Business the Woman's Way podcast. Listen, I was a financial advisor for over a decade, and I got so sick of the old archaic strategies that your grandpa used to get clients. What the industry teaches today is still so outdated and just doesn't work anymore. So I had to find a better way for myself, and then I got obsessed with sharing these how-tos with other women like me. The stuff I teach doesn't require giving up your life, your sanity, or your family time. I want women like you to have it easier than I had it, so you can thrive in the industry. I've now helped thousands of women grow their financial businesses to multiple six figures, some even seven figures per year. So on this podcast, you're going to get an inside look at how they did it so you can do it too. Let's dive into the show. I am here with Leeson Stromberg, who is the CEO of PrismWork, a workplace culture and leadership consultancy. She and her team, they work with clients to help them build next-in-class 21st century cultures with the future-forward leaders that their companies need to succeed. She's also a best-selling author, and check out her book, Work, Pause, Thrive. I'm very interested in that. She's been in numerous high-profile conferences, South by Southwest, TEDx, so many more. This woman is awesome. Very, very excited to have you here. Welcome, Leeson.
Thank you, Robin. Thanks, listeners, for joining us.
I'm really excited to talk to you specifically about navigating your career with the responsibilities of family and also work, because I'm going through this right now with like having nanny issues for the last few months. So it is such a navigation. So start with kind of your story about that and how it's been for you. And I know your book has a lot to do with that as well. And bring us in with that, and then we'll go from there.
Sure. So in my own journey, right, I got my graduate from college, went out and got my MBA, thought I was going to rise right straight up to that corner office, you know, when we actually all had offices. And come to find out, once I had children, and frankly, I was moving along, you know, at a steady clip very quickly and getting promoted, et cetera, et cetera. And then I had children. And all of a sudden, I kind of started hitting these walls, glass, ceiling, cement, whatever you want to call it, and didn't really understand what's going on. And it was after the birth of my second child, where I had spent months on bed rest, frankly, and I actually needed some support around how to reintegrate after that bed rest. And I was a vice president of an advertising agency, and I had a huge team, and we'd been doing all this great work. I'd literally been calling in from my bed rest because we actually didn't have this thing called the internet back in the day. And my company was like, no, you're either all in or you're all out. There was no flexibility, no kind of concept of, hey, you've been an incredible performer for us. You're an incredible deliverer, but you know, it can't happen. And so I decided I'm taking my human capital elsewhere. And I ended up launching on this very nonlinear career that was really optimized to ensure that I could be the kind of mother I wanted to be, but also be an incredible, successful professional. How do you do those two things? I actually had some success. And in fact, I had a team of women, a mom's group that also had had these very nonlinear careers. And many of them are some of the most successful women in Silicon Valley's names you would recognize. And so when Lean In came out, I said, wait a minute, there's another path. This whole lean in, you know, I'm looking for motherhood in the book and I'm finding it. And I said, we've got to change the narrative because there is another narrative out there. And so I ended up interviewing 186 women and surveying 1,500 more to learn how did women navigate work, family, you know, the constraints that we have as mothers in particular, but as parents in general. And it was eye-opening for me, and happy to discuss at length what I learned.
Yeah. So what would you say are the biggest takeaways? Well, actually, let me back up a step because I'm kind of curious. So when you said you took your human capital, and I like to say human capital, that's cool. I haven't really heard that, but you took your human capital and did you start a new business or did you just find a place? Okay. So you started your business. And what was that business?
It was a great time to be a branding marketing expert in tech. I live in the Silicon Valley Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area. And I took my marketing chops and put my little shingle out and started my own consulting and strategy practice, working with tech startups and actually some very large tech firms. What was interesting is I was working probably on average about 35 hours a week, on my own schedule, on my own time, and making significantly more than I had working full time at this company where I was commuting an hour each way. And so I was very much an early adopter to what we're seeing today, this kind of work from anywhere, be highly productive, create your own narrative in a way that can actually, and not commute, which for me was very important, very meaningful at the time and remains. So for environmental reasons.
The Bay Area, hello traffic. Well,
exactly. Exactly.
I'm from the Bay Area, so I know how bad it is.
No, it's true.
So that's awesome. Okay. So you did, cause I wasn't sure when you said that, when you started over kind of thing, like if you had your own business. So that's awesome. What can I interweave that with like what you learned from all these interviews and how you did it, but also what themes that you heard and that you found with these women who had to kind of create their own path? Because as financial advisors, as insurance professionals, like whether you work for a company or you have your own RIA, you're creating your own book of business, your own clientele, like you have your clients, and you have to create it no matter how much they tell you, here's what you have to do. And you have to make this many calls and you have to do this much, many networking events. Like it's actually, even though there's friction, it's actually up to you what you do in order to create success, even though sometimes they're on your back and look at your numbers. But really, like I tell my ladies all the time, like just silence what they're telling you, because I know it doesn't work. I mean, yes, it will work, but it's not efficient and effective. So let's just do it this way. And it actually will be more aligned with your life. So what specific themes did you find in your life and these thousands of women or hundreds of women that you spoke to who sound so successful that you won't even tell me who they are?
Well, let's start with shout out to all the women financial advisors. We need more of you. Boom. I can't tell you how many financial advisors, male, that I fired because they wouldn't listen to me and they only listened to my husband. So let's start there.
Yeah,
let's also, awesome. So right. And shout out to any woman that is actually trying to figure out how to navigate their careers in this incredibly oppressive anti-family environment. I mean, come on, we all know the data, the meta, you know, the story around our government that does nothing to support working families is shocking to me. You know, what, there are 192 countries in the UN, the US is one of two that doesn't have paid parental leave. You've got to be joking me, right? It's like every other country. And if you actually look at female engagement in the workforce, which is something I learned, you look at American participation and everyone's talking about the great resignation of women in the workplace. Let's be clear, our workplace engagement has stagnated for the last 25 years. We have not gone up. Almost every other of our competitors, European countries, Asian countries, we're seeing increasing female workforce participation. Our country stagnated. Point being, there is macro forces that are really weighing on women and parenting and women in the workplace, right? Let's start there if you're a parent and we're talking about that. There's also workplace constraints, right? What is success considered? What do we consider success? The person who's Joan Williams at UCSF has defined what's called the ideal worker. Well, what's the ideal worker? It's the person who's work devoted, available 24/7, can travel at the drop of the hat, has some magical fairy at home doing all the laundry, taking care of the kids, making the food, going grocery shopping. Now, I don't know who that is, but I can tell you it was probably my dad, who had my mother at home being the lovely housewife, supporting his very successful career. That's awesome. But that is not the reality for the vast majority of American women today, or men for that matter. So what do you do when you've got a workplace that doesn't support working families, right? Most workplaces don't have meaningful paid leave. You know, they don't have, you know, all of the things, the infrastructure to actually support working parents. What's exciting to me right now is watching this kind of great awakening and employers desperate to figure out how to attract great talent and understanding that it's not just a women's issue. Millennial men are saying, I'm not going to work there. I want paid leave. I want this. I want these things that all of us deserve. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing some real transition. But I actually changed the subject and you were asking me about how did the women I interviewed navigate this? What were their tools and tricks? And I'll start with something that I so deeply admired. And it wasn't, it was something I wish I had and I didn't. I left feeling like a failure. I left thinking I'm going to have to figure this out. I left not being empowered and thoughtful about my career path. So many of the women, successful women who had these nonlinear careers were very intentional about their choices. They didn't view it as a failure to say, hey, when my children are this age, I'm going to downshift temporarily. And that could mean to go to part-time. It could mean, I had one woman say, I went from an 80-hour work week job to a 40-hour work week. That was my pause, right? So it's all self-defined, but being very self-determined about what does success look like for me? How am I going to navigate this? And know that this is a not forever situation. And not forever situations for some of the women I spoke to actually meant that they were all into their careers when their kids were younger and then pause when their kids were older. So it's all about defining what works for you and understanding that you're operating within this kind of market environment that have these forces that makes it very challenging. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, what you're saying is, I mean, a lot has to do with self-defining it, but then how, if you can define it, how do you create that? Like, I mean, there's so many constraints and there's so many things. I'm just thinking of the listener right now going like you said, there's a magical fairy and I can, I sometimes tell stories of how I have someone and, you know, oh, I'm so lucky because I have money and I can have someone like do my dishes at night. And like, you know, and I'm not trying to say that, I'm saying it like facetiously because it's ridiculous that I would do that. But it was also, I hired someone to do my dishes at night because I didn't want to do it. And I was able, it actually wasn't that much money. It was like $500 a month to get someone to do that comparatively when you're like, oh, that will free up so much time in my head. And like, I had that magical fairy. Okay. We didn't keep the magical fairy for very long because we didn't want that person in our house, in our lifestyle. We shifted that, but money can give you those magical fairies theoretically, mm-hmm. right? Where you can have someone doing your laundry and you can have, you know, someone doing your dishes and you can have someone cleaning up after your messes, which is like the luxury that I want and I like because I make messes. But there are a lot of women who are here, maybe even if they have a very successful financial career, still going like, yeah, but I don't want to do that. Or that's not where I want to put my money or how do you do that? And then there are a lot of women who are just starting going like, I can barely pay my bills and I'm supposed to be a financial advisor, let alone hire someone to do that. So I can define it all day long, but like, how do I actually do that? Like what is going to create that success? Like you had, where you left your company, you started new and you were able to not just replace your income, but then to exceed your income before working half the time or at least partial time. Like, how do I do that? Lisa, how do I do that? That's what we want to know.
So you're asking so many really important questions. And let me back up and say one thing. I am so tired of us blaming women. We are a culture that is focused on individualism. When you operate with individualism, we then don't change systems. We have to collectively change the system. If we keep trying to solve our individual problems, we are not going to solve the collective problem of a country and a workplace that does not support working parents. So, and my research was around knowledge workers, which was really about college graduates, right? Well, to a certain degree, by definition, if you have a college degree, yes, you may have some money or less money, but relatively, you are established and supported to, you've invested in your career to be successful financially, or at least cover your bills, let's just say, right? There's a whole swath of women, a vast majority of American women that actually don't have those resources. So I want to make sure that we're talking about the knowledge worker, which is where I feel like I can add some real value, and also say, we knowledge workers have to really band together to support all women in this country. So that's, I want to frame that first, because if we keep making it an individual solution, individual problem, we will not see significant change. So now that we've got that out of the way, let's be clear. I'm married. I'm still married to the same guy I was married back then. He had benefits and he had a stable salary. which was the foundation that allowed me to take a risk. Hmm. He and I had spent quite a bit talking about how long am I going to take this risk? We use savings. What is it going to take for us to do this and how long? So we did a financial analysis to determine what would that do. But I also wasn't working. There was another period of my career where I actually left the paid workforce for about 2 years. I did that twice. Actually, I've now just done it for a third time. All of them were related to caregiving situations in my life and my family. And we did the math. The USDA actually has what they call a child care calculator. And according to the child care calculator, I basically forego about $1.5 million in net income, including total income, including bonus, promotion dollars, retirement, Social Security, et cetera, by pausing those two separate times. The most recent time was a few years ago, so it wasn't part of the calculation. The point being, $1.5 million is a major hit to my financial situation and my family. I didn't understand the consequences of that. So I love all of these financial advisors listening right now. And if you have women in your path or husbands, men and women, partners in your path, trying to figure out how to navigate this, there are true long-term financial consequences to pausing your career. Thinking about that and being thoughtful about it really matters. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, how do you do that? Well, I mean, don't do what I did, which was not have a plan. What a dumbo. I had no plan for what I did. I was just pissed off. And I'm like, I'm taking my human capital elsewhere. And then I sat down with my husband and said, yeah, honey, by the way, I quit today. So we got to talk. Not a good strategy. Be smart. Have a plan. Understand what your two-year goal is, three-year goal is. Map out financially how to support yourself in terms of what savings do you have available to you. Understand your deal breakers, right? Like I also can't stand dishes, right? But here's the great thing. I got a husband who loves dishes. He can't stand ironing. I actually love to iron. There's a real division of labor in our family. So the other thing, and one of my friends, Eve Rodsky, writes a lot about this in her book, Fair Play, about how women's time is not valued. So how are you valuing your time? Are you saying my time is as important as my partner's time? And assume you're married, you know, in a heterosexual marriage, are you actually saying that your time is as important? So when he goes golfing or goes tennis or, you know, has a business meeting in the evening, your career and your time is less valuable. So you're willing to sacrifice that? Really be thoughtful about what that looks like. I was lucky enough to have one thing I do agree with Sheryl Sandberg on is one of her messages was make sure you marry a guy who, you know, respects and values women's time and respects and values your contributions and your career. I was lucky enough to have that and actually was very thoughtful about choosing my partner around that. So those are it was interesting in my research for my book, the women who were divorced, the vast majority of them were divorced because the husbands didn't respect their careers and diminished and devalued their contributions. That was fascinating to me. So the other thing that was really interesting is the women who actually never left the paid workforce, the vast majority of them, actually almost 50% of them, had partners who had careers that weren't as, there wasn't two power couple, right? It was one of their careers was really the power career, and the second one was in support of that. Either the husband stayed home full time or he worked part time to support the career. So that kind of linear career path requires that ideal worker. Now, it doesn't matter if the ideal worker is male or female, right? But it does require that. So if we don't change our systems, you're going to see more and more of that, which means the pressure is on women to fill in the gap. So women, how are we filling in the gap? What are our choices around that?
Yeah, that's interesting. So I'm thinking about my relationship and I'm thinking about the dynamic there. And I do have a very supportive husband, although I do think it's very much assumed that I will make sure the kids are taken care of. And there's certain things that are assumed, just like you said, you know, you're okay with ironing. He's okay with the dishes. Like, I'm not okay with either. So no, but really I never iron.
Totally good.
but we do kind of, we fell into our roles, right? And I'm the one that like has been taking care of finding the nanny and managing having the nanny and when the nanny comes. And if the nanny's not here, like I'm with the kids. And, you know, if I want him to watch the kids, I have to put on his calendar, you know, now it's your time. Like you're with daddy's with kids or Trevor's with the kids. And so I sometimes get frustrated by that because I'm like, why does it have to be me that I'm especially now we've had some nanny challenges and my nanny now has COVID, as I mentioned before we started recording. And it's like, we've had to find out where we can find pockets of work, both of us, but it tends to be on me first. And then I have to kind of ask, and you know, we women don't always want to ask for help, you know? So it's like, I have to be like, can you watch the kids, as opposed to, you know, it's gotten to a point now where it's like, let's look at our schedules, when you're watching, when I'm watching. And neither one of our careers is like that, where one is more like, we're kind of both very, you know, have a lot of success. So it's not like, oh, you better work now because you're going to make a lot more money, or I better work now because I'm going to make a lot more money. It's like, we both have successful businesses. If we're not there, things start to fall apart a little bit, you know, to some degree. And luckily we have teams and stuff, but I do think there's, you know, that's where we are now. And it's kind of luxurious, because if we don't show up to everything, like, we still have, like I said, we still have a team to help us, and it won't completely fall apart. But I remember, I mean, even before we got married, my husband had just declared a $2.2 million bankruptcy, something that was very, very easy to never forget. So he was completely broke. I was working as a financial advisor. I think I got to a point where I was making $100,000 a year, and we weren't even married, and I'm paying the bills and already feeling a little resentful because of it, scared he'll never be able to make money again because he just went through a $2.2 million bankruptcy. He had a daughter. You know, she was 3 when we moved in together. So all this baggage and all this stress and pressure on me as a woman to make money. And this is before we even together had kids, you know, and now it's at a point where I'm like, oh, woe is me. I don't have a nanny for, you know, full time right now. You know, it's really not that big of a deal. But what I think is just important is that we only got here because of the risks we took. And I could never have planned this. You said it's like great to have a plan, but what happened really that actually did work wasn't, not, I'm not saying it's not good to have a plan. Like, it's very idealistic to have a plan. But what I think is important, especially as business owners, is to be willing to take risk. And there I was in my relationship, taking a risk with someone who declared a, you know, bankruptcy. There I was in my career, taking a risk to be like, okay, I can do this. And I can even kind of support my boyfriend who became a husband, you know, for a time being. And I'm taking a risk to now, when I, you know, have kids, to build this successful business. Like, I took a lot of risks. I invested a lot of money in coaching, a lot of money in seminars, a lot of money in this. And if I had planned this stuff, like, there's no way I would have taken action. Like, if I was okay, I'm going to go in debt and, like, I'm going to, you know, in order to have the success. So how do you balance that? Because,
well, let's be clear. Hello, who plan? All plans go awry, right? Let's Shakespeare. But let's be very clear. The master point of leadership, what I really saw in the women I interviewed, and certainly in my own career, is agility, right? How can we be agile and responsive and be resilient? And how can we navigate these things? In my company right now, Prison Work, we talk about hearty leadership. Hearty stands for humility, empathy, accountability, resiliency, transparency, and inclusivity. And in fact, your readers or listeners can go visit hardyquotient.com to see how strong they are in these various attributes. It's really cool. It's a new self-assessment we just created. Yeah. So one of the things that I saw in the women who I interviewed who'd had these successful careers was a real sense of humility, frankly. Like, I don't have all the answers. So, you know, I'm going to just try and figure it out and learn. So that growth mindset, that humility growth mindset, as well as a real resiliency. The other thing that I noticed that was fascinating is they were very transparent. I'm here where I am. I'm going to try and learn something more. I'm when they pause their careers, for example, they were very explicit. I'm pausing for a period of time. I'm letting you know this is my, you know, current plan. It might change, but this is what I'm doing. And they weren't hiding their truth. Mm-hmm. But I want to go back to something you said, Robin, that is so important. You said, and I'm going to misquote you, but essentially you said, it's still de facto your responsibility. And I would argue that we have a country that believes that it, and maybe a world that believes that parenting is still a female, primarily the mother's responsibility. And I think that is a missed opportunity for men who, certainly millennial men, who want to father in a different way and want to see and be engaged fathers. I think women can and do gatekeep around that. Well, I'm supposed to be the expert, so I'm going to gatekeep. And I also think that we allow ourselves to get trapped into that. And this is what led to, as I said, so many of the divorces, because when these women had actually went back full time to their careers and their husbands were like, oh, no, you still have to do everything. And by the way, make money to fix the bankruptcy we just went through or whatever it is. You can't do it all. That is a myth. That whole myth is wrong. And so what can you do? And how can you create healthy boundaries for yourself? And how can you justify and validate your choices and value your time and have an alliance? My husband and I talk about designed alliances. What are we designing explicitly as a couple that we want to agree? What are we actually rising that's hidden that maybe we're not even honoring or being truthful to ourselves around? What's the designed alliance so we can have agreement on how we want to move forward? And we try and do that designed alliance, you know, uptake, I'd say probably every year or every other year, kind of how are we doing now? What's going on? What's changed? How do we agile in response to this? Yeah, because all plans go awry.
Yeah, for sure. And I definitely, like I said, it ends up on me, but there are definitely things that end up on him too. So I'm not even saying, man, it's not fair, because like you said, I also probably take that on. I want to be mommy. I want to be, you know, the one that the kids want, you know, and he takes on all these house projects that I'm like, yeah, no, I'm not doing that. Not even doing that. Like, in one of those is typically laundry. He's like, can you help with laundry since Lanny's not here? I'm like, yeah. There's a pile of laundry, you know? So, I mean, there's certain things like
but you're dividing labor in a powerful way and you're being thoughtful about it, which is, yeah, which is great.
But there comes a point where I think that you kind of, you know, your value, whether it's in a relationship or within your business or where your time is best spent. And there are certain things that like, I don't want to spend my time doing. But I also think it's what you said, I think that was really huge for me. And it's kind of how I see the industry, the financial industry in general, is that it's not an individual problem. It's really something that we have to change the trajectory of where we're going as a culture. And I think that's something I typically wouldn't think of, except for like I talk about increasing the footprint of women in the industry, like as a big project for us as women. We have to work together to do that. And bringing that back, because I think in my family thing is like, this is an individual thing, but you're talking about changing the culture, making a huge shift in the way people think and how women are accepted and how, you know, even what they do and how they spend their time is accepted. And especially in the financial services industry, I mean, I've heard it so many times where just today on one of my coaching calls, this woman said, I said, let's start with celebrations. And people are quiet, and they're all women, and they're like super quiet. And I'm like, come on, ladies. And I literally was like, let's get some celebrations. This is crazy. And then, you know, out comes someone and she says, well, I did win the Rookie of the Year award last year for my, you know, for financial advisor. And I was only at the company for 4 months. And I was like, girl, damn.
Killed that.
Like, how come it took you that long? Like, I had to pull it out of you to celebrate that. Someone else said, well, I got my first financial planning, you know, services client. And I'm like, why aren't we celebrating ourselves? We need to celebrate. And the woman who said that she won the award, she said, and her supervisor, OSJ, whatever it was, he didn't even tell her or congratulate her. It was the secretary that told her. So like, the culture is not even to support these women. I have another client who basically said that she's in an office with all men and they go out to like happy hour. She walked around the street they're in the office, even during this time, but in the office, and she saw them all hanging out at happy hour. They didn't even invite her, you know, and they had like a golf game, like a golf tournament or something that they played on a tournament, but whatever. They played golf without her, didn't even invite her. And she's like, and I play golf. And I'm like, I'm sitting at home working all day, you know, and working, I'm in my little bubble of this is my life. I create my life and I create the success and I'm very responsible for the things that are happening for me and not to me. And I feel like I control that and I'm proud of that. And I create the success and I create the destiny and being part of this industry, like where I'm trying to get women to be so successful that we create a ripple effect and have other women's success. Like you said at the beginning, it's like, there's no competition with women. Like, we should be supporting each other. But I think this is like, what I want to end with is like, we're on this path together. We should be supporting each other in this, and we should create a movement. It's not just, you know, creating success. It's not just creating, you know, there's no individual equality, right? It's creating a movement. And how do we do this together to inspire other people to be on board with this? So I think that's a huge takeaway, because I typically put a lot on myself because I know I can create success. I, even my husband said, like, when we first started dating, you know, I was actually single for about 10 years before we started dating. And so I was just very much like, I, and he's like, I'm all about team. It's we. Mm-hmm. Like, everything he talks about is we. And I'm still a little bit on the like I movement, because like, I've been like that for so long that I think it's on me. But I just wanted to emphasize that, because I think that's huge. And I know we're coming to the top of the hour and you have another appointment. So anything to add? And then I definitely want you to tell them about, because talking about bringing all these women together and doing things for other women, you have a project, you're on the board of the Prosperity Project, Financial Literacy for Young Black Women. So tell us a little bit about that. Anything you want to add to kind of close up shop here?
Well, let's start with amen, sister. I mean, we have got to stop thinking it's all on our shoulders and really start think about the collective. How can we collectively rise? I'm in part of a number of different women's organizations in the Bay Area. There's a phenomenal group called How Women Lead. If any of your financial advisors, actually it's national now, so you can check out howwomenlead.org. And there's all kinds of support for women. What I find is singularly women right now are some of my business advocates. Most of my new business for my consulting practice comes from my network of women. Men too. I'm not here to say men aren't being great support, but I'm now finding we women are like, okay, this has got to stop. We got to create our own girls network, if you will, or you know, women's network. So that is something that's happening. The other thing is I think, you know, I'm going to be 60 this year and I'm looking back and saying, what did 32-year-old Lisa need, and who could I have supported, and how can I amplify her? And you know, even at 32, I think I was thinking that way. Like, what did 16-year-old Lisa need? So there is something about servant leadership, for lack of a better word. And I think we're all leaders. I don't care if you're leading yourself or you're leading, you know, what you're leading. We're all leaders in our lives. So how can you actually have that servant leader mindset? So you're actually going out to serve others. And if you want to go out like you're doing, Robin, and serving women and amplifying women, God bless you, because we need more of that. And I love the whole concept about women and money. So thank you for that. Back to the Prosperity Project. Look, after, for me, understanding that there is such an undue burden for Black women in our country when it comes to college-educated Black women, often who are first in their families to graduate from college, who have no financial literacy training or expertise, graduate and are saddled with debt. To me, that's just a fundamental, you're never going to get out of that barrier. So what was one way that I could really contribute and give back? And I joined the board of the Prosperity Project, and we are just seeing, we've developed a financial literacy by Black women, for Black women, speaking specifically to their needs, their culture, their understanding, really being culturally competent to their unique challenges, understanding what it's like in that intersectional, you know, burdens of racism and sexism and everything else. And then creating a program about retroactive scholarships to help them defray the cost of their scholarships that they're burdened with, a student debt, to break that cycle of poverty or under potential. So for me, watching the young women who started this organization, helping support them, is a huge reward, an emotional reward. So check out prosperityproject.com or .org. Please consider donating. And we'll be having an annual conference up in May, and we are looking for sponsors. So if your company or organization is interested in sponsoring, please let me know, leesonstromberg@gmail.com. And I'd love your support. We'd love your support.
That's amazing. That's awesome. And tell us again where to do Hearty. What did you call it?
Yeah, it's go to www.hearty, HEARTI quotient. Don't ask me to spell it. QUITI, whatever. I'm a bad speller. .com.
Can help you.
Yeah. Go check it out. You can assess your own kind of modern leadership skills and competencies, and we'll give you a kind of a report, and you'll be able to understand where you are. Those soft skills are the skills that we're seeing true success happen in this kind of new world of work. And so that lack of empathy, where those guys and went and had cocktails and excluded that is not hearty. That speaks to, you know, a lack of empathy, a lack of, you know, inclusion, right? I is inclusion. So like, go find that out and then find your peeps who are like you, because you want that, people who are hearty leaders.
Awesome. And don't forget to check out the book, Work, Pause, Thrive. Well, thank you so much for joining me. This has been great. And those of you joining us, this is a lot to think about. You might want to listen to this one again and really think about your place, like not just individual, but really how, as the collective, like you can play a role in this, because we women need to work together, we need to stick together, and we need to create change together. So thanks, Lisa, and so great to have you.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Are you getting all the quality prospects on your calendar that you'd like? If not, join us in the Appointment Generator Challenge. Go to femalefinancialadvisors.com and register for free. We guarantee you'll get 5 quality appointments in 5 days if you follow this system, and you can do it from online. You don't even have to pick up the phone. Whether you're just starting, whether you've been in the industry 3 to 5 years, or even 30 years, this challenge will be perfect for you. Check it out, femalefinancialadvisors.com, and register for absolutely free. Can't wait to see you there.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.